You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that for the second year in a row, the life expectancy of Wisconsinites is declining. We'll talk to a public health expert to find out what's behind that change. First, for 2020 presidential candidates, one issue is going to be a fixture in next year's campaign, and that's health care. It dominated last year's midterm elections, and now 2020 Democratic candidates are embracing a spectrum of changes, from Medicare for all to ideas like a public option. But our next guest says the debate is missing the mark on health care and not focusing on what's important to most Americans, cutting the costs of health care, no matter who's paying the bill. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is the Vice Provost for Global Initiatives and Chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Emanuel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
We'll talk about this this focus we have in the healthcare debate. It seems like it's a lot about who's paying for the coverage, individuals, businesses, the government, not on the cost itself.
Yeah, first of all, we shouldn't trivialize, you know, how we structure the payment and the financing of healthcare and whether the government's involved and whether employers are involved and how much each group pays. That is important. And one of the problems in America is it's pretty complicated whether you're eligible for Medicare or Medicaid or private employer-sponsored insurance. But I think at this moment, when we're sort of close to about 90% of the population with coverage, and we've made big gains, 20 million people getting coverage through the Affordable Care Act, increasingly the problem is affordability. And we see a lot of Americans who, I've got insurance, but I'm still worried that I won't be able to afford the deductible, or I'm still worried about the size of my a visit to the emergency room. And we've certainly had a lot of media reports about, you know, bills from the emergency room for a simple thing like stitches running thousands and thousands of dollars that make people, I think, very worried. And then there's, of course, the ever-present drug costs, which is really bothering people. And, you know, as I have said, 290 million Americans have coverage, 295 million, something in that range. And those people are worried about how much it's costing. And that's a big swath of the American public. And we need a strategy for getting our arms around the ever-increasing healthcare costs.
You wrote about these issues in a recent opinion piece. And one of the points you make was, as you just mentioned, the cost of prescription drugs. How do we look when it comes to our drug costs compared to other comparable developed countries?
Fat and bloated. The fact of the matter is that on a per-person basis, the United States spends nearly $1,500 per person on drugs. And our next closest country is at about $940 per person in drugs. And let me be clear with your listeners. That's not because Americans are taking lots of drugs and other people are much more prudent about the drugs they take. We certainly take fewer drugs than a lot of people in other countries. It's notable that we probably on a per person basis are somewhat less than other countries. It's all about the price of our drugs. Our drugs are priced very high. I'm just in the midst of completing a book called Which Country Has the World's Best Healthcare System? And one of the things you do if you go around to other developed countries is note that all of them regulate drug prices in some way. And the United States is the singular standout in that we give drug companies monopolies through patent protection, through FDA marketing exclusivity, and then we let them set the prices. We know there's good economic theory and good economic practice. We know where that leads when you give someone a monopoly, just ever higher prices. And so that's what we see in the drug market.
The argument there is always, okay, yeah, they make a lot of money doing it, but that money incentivizes drug companies to develop new and hopefully useful drugs.
Yeah, that's the argument. There's not a whole lot of great proof about it. So the first thing to recognize for your listeners, again, is that if you take a dollar at a drug company, less than 20 cents of that dollar goes to research and development of new drugs. That means 80 cents is going to other stuff ahead of the amount of money that they spend on research and development is on average across all the drug companies marketing and getting doxed to write prescriptions and getting patients to demand medications. Ahead of that is also profits. Drug companies are among the most profitable sectors, economic industries there are. They're more profitable on average than the 10 most profitable drug companies are more profitable than the big banks and the big tech companies. So there's plenty of money in that sector to do other things, and it's partially a decision by the drug companies. You know, I love them saying, look, it's a high-risk business. A lot of these things fail, and it is true. A lot of the stuff or the drugs that they bring to human trials won't make it in the end, but it can't be that high risk if they're walking away one after another with 20 to 25% profit margins.
Talking to doctors.
That defies risk.
Talking to Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel from the University of Pennsylvania, he makes the case that we need to do a lot to lower the costs of healthcare here in the United States. Before we move on from drugs, are you calling for an end to that system of monopolies? People have talked about better negotiations in Medicare and elsewhere. What would help bring those prices down?
So I think, first of all, you know, we're not going to end monopolies. We're not going to end the patent system. We don't want the FDA to stop reviewing drugs and giving marketing exclusivity. But we do want to say that doesn't mean you can charge whatever you want. As I said, every other developed country has some mechanism for regulating drug prices, whether they say, all right, let's look at what other countries are charging, and that will establish a maximal price for our country. Let's look at value-based pricing and look at the health benefits we're getting from this that drug. That'll relate, that'll establish a price for the drug. So we have to adopt some way of negotiating prices with drug manufacturers using external criteria, like what other countries charge, like how much health is improved for the drug. It does seem a little crazy to be spending, say, $100,000 on a cancer drug that prolongs life a few weeks or a few months. That just doesn't seem like the right kind of ratio. Again, putting it into context of what the average American earns. You know, what I like to say is, look, the average income for an American household is about $60,000 per year, right? Having a drug that prolongs life for a couple of months at $100,000 or $120,000 seems out of whack and defies common sense. Finally, I would remind everyone on who's listening is that we all pay for drugs. When I go to the pharmacy and get a drug and it's covered by my insurance, even if I'm paying a lot of it, right, the other parts are coming from insurance, which means your fellow Americans are actually paying, helping you pay the bill for that expensive drug. So we all have an interest in keeping drug costs under control, even if we ourselves are not taking drugs and not expending $100,000 on a drug. We're actually paying for someone else's drugs, and we need to be concerned about drug prices, even if we're not on those super expensive drugs.
Another place you find room for savings is in the cost of a hospital visit, especially under private insurance, or I guess out-of-pocket payments. What do you see there?
Well, so, you know, Medicare and Medicaid tell hospitals what they're going to pay for a hospital stay. If you get a, you know, heart bypass surgery, if you get a hip replacement, Medicare says, here's what it is, hospital. You're covering the whole visit, and here's how much we're paying you. That's not true on the private side for private insurance. There's a negotiation, and over the last more than a decade, we've seen a lot of hospital consolidation, the formation of big hospital systems. And the main motivation there, while hospitals often say, you know, we're more efficient, actually most of the data suggests that it leads to higher prices because they have local monopolies. And again, they use their monopoly power to negotiate higher rates from the insurers. So if you say, wow, my premiums are going way up, you ought to ask the next question. Why are the premiums going way up? Is it because the profit margin of the insurance companies are that high? The answer to that is probably not. It's because their costs are high, and a major factor in their costs, about a third of the hospital, a third of insurance costs and healthcare costs go to hospitals, and that's high hospital costs are a major driver of high premiums. Between high drug prices and high hospital costs, you have a big, big driver of the increase in premiums. And, you know, hospitals have been, you know, gobbling up other hospitals in order to increase their negotiating leverage.
Talking to Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, Vice Provost for Global Initiatives, Chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania, looking at the costs of healthcare, not just who's covering those costs, but how to lower them. Dr. Emanuel, we were just talking about the cost of hospital visits. You were talking about, in effect, monopolies at hospitals. What would you see as a solution? How would you want to bring those costs down?
So I do think that there's two solutions. One is we need a bit better enforcement of antitrust and focusing really on local monopolies of hospitals. And I think in general, there's been a view that we haven't had sufficient antitrust activity and aggressive enforcement of those standards in the United States outside of healthcare and certainly inside of healthcare. There are obviously complex cases to bring, but I think we need a lot more clarity about the standards. And again, in healthcare, especially looking at local micro monopolies rather than, you know, statewide monopolies and things like that, because healthcare is local. People don't travel hundreds of miles typically unless they're in very rural areas for their healthcare. That's one thing. Another thing is we could legislate maximal prices that hospitals can charge private insurance. So you could say you can't charge more, as I suggested, than 140% of Medicare for the service. And I think that setting a maximal price would be effective. We have seen over the last 20 years hospital prices for the private sector, again, private insurance, go up much, much more rapidly than the prices for Medicare. And I think that needs to be controlled.
Let's bring on a caller now. Paula is with us in La Crosse. Paula, hi.
Oh, hi. I've been in healthcare for 33 years, and I've really seen it getting better the last 10 years in regards to our end of life care and, you know, really focusing on getting people's primary care providers to have advanced directives and what people want and palliative care. But I still see, you know, a lot of cost. And I know you mentioned about, like, for example, the cost of a chemotherapy drug when, you know, life expectancy. So just curious, the statistic, is that getting better?
That's a great question. It's an area I've worked on since the mid-1980s, trying to improve end-of-life care in our country. So what do we know about the cost of end-of-life care? About 0.75%, so less than 1% of Americans die each year, and we spend about 8.5% to 10% of all healthcare spending goes to that 0.75% of Americans. So it is relatively very expensive. They're 10 times the average person, and we know the closer you are to death, the much higher the costs are. There are many, many things we can do, as you point out. Don't do the last chemotherapy. You know, we know that 10% of all cancer patients get chemotherapy inside the last 30 days of life. That doesn't seem like, you know, it's not hard to predict when the last 30 days or when you're close to the end. We know that about 40% of cancer patients end up in the ICU in the last 6 months of life. So there are lots of things that could be done. In general, we have done better in cancer at getting patients hospice care, and that has actually a majority of cancer patients at the end of life do get hospice care. We could do more of that, and not just for cancer patients. In addition, most of us who work in the area think we need to move upstream. We need to, you know, well before the last month or 2 months of life, really begin talking and getting patients more home care, getting them comfortable being in the home, getting them more services so they will stay in the home and not pop into the hospital where expenses really go dramatically higher. Interestingly, in the last few years, there have been a number of companies that have begun trying to adopt some of these new techniques to improve palliative care and to keep patients at home and give them more services at home. And so I think we're going to have some interesting efforts to do that. And, you know, when I started 30 years ago, there was no idea that we would, you know, have this widespread social acceptance of trying to improve end-of-life care to reduce the cost and improve the quality and keep patients at home. And I think that's one of the positive signs I see in end-of-life care is the fact that we're now much more frank about trying to do what you said, which is, you know, not do the heroic interventions and keep patients comfortable and with their family.
Paula, thanks for the call. We're talking to Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel from the University of Pennsylvania about bringing down the costs of health care. Back to your calls. Michael is with us now in Mequon. Michael, hi.
Hi, Dr. Emanuel. It's great to hear your views on these things.
Thank you.
In reading about health care in other countries, some of the things that hit me are that we probably should have a health czar who can work with the states and also sort of look at rationalizing how do you use health resources and which mergers do you approve and where do you need more competition maybe and more do you need less competition. One of the big things it seems to me also is that we have to change the way we deliver care. The cost of care itself has to be reduced because that overlies everything else. And we hear, you know, the medical literature talks about it, but in the popular literature, in the popular press, we don't hear a lot about how one can redesign care to reduce our costs.
Michael, thanks for the call. And Dr. Emanuel, you talk about this in that piece I referenced on the incentives for healthcare providers.
That, your listener, just put into an area that I've been working on for a long time and I'm really focused on now, which is, you know, in the end, doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners, they end up, you know, giving a lot of the medicine, ordering tests, ordering treatments, and changing their incentives and changing how they provide care and approach the care process is important. And to do that, we need to move off what we call the fee-for-service system, where we pay people to do various activities, and we need to pay in a much different way. We need to bundle and say, all right, all that hip replacement, whether it's the surgery or the rehabilitation or the radiology or it's the implant, all of that is one price. We're paying you for the entire care, not each slice. Similarly, we can change and pay primary care doctors, pediatricians, and internists, and we can say, you know what? We're going to pay you per patient a set fee every month, and you're going to be incentivized to keep them healthy and not to spend unnecessarily on them. We know that the healthcare system in the United States, like many other healthcare systems, has a lot of unnecessary services. Those are, we do a test, even though it's not going to be good for the patient, it's not going to improve their health, or we give them a treatment, and there is a cheaper treatment, a cheaper drug, or a cheaper radiation treatment or a cheaper surgery that would have made a big difference. And we've got to get those unnecessary services, those inefficiently delivered services out of the system. And that is very important. And the only way we're going to get doctors to and hospitals to focus on that is to change how we pay them so that they don't make more money by doing more things. That is a very silly system to incentivize efficiency. So having a set fee for a whole set of activities is probably much more important. And if doctors are at risk, they might actually focus much more on keeping people healthy and on wellness rather than just attend to patients when they become sick. So this shift in how we pay and the financial incentives, I think, is the long-term solution to the affordability of healthcare.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call. And just our last minute, I want to touch on one more problem area you point out in your opinion piece, what you call wasteful insurance billing practices. What are we seeing?
Everyone knows the typical thing. Thousands of people at insurance companies, thousands of people at hospitals, processing bills, and the bills are never right, and they're very expensive, and they add a lot to the cost. And it's true. A large portion of healthcare costs are bill processing. We need to have a system that is more standardized, that has a central clearinghouse, just like ATMs. And it is complicated in healthcare, but we can do a lot to standardize the processes and standardize the clearinghouse efforts behind the scenes and reduce the number of people who actually process that paperwork. I think we have to get there. I know that there are, a number of new startup companies focusing on that, and I'm mildly optimistic with some government leadership we can actually make that happen.
Dr. Emanuel, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. And this is an important issue, and I'm sure your audience is, you know, really does care about it because it affects their paycheck and their wallets.
That's Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, the Vice Provost for Global Initiatives and Chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. He's with us today to talk about why he wants to hear presidential candidates talking not just about healthcare coverage, but on also cutting the costs of delivering healthcare to Americans.